ते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय We can just read these verses together. We're going to read 6 through 7 and 8 through 11. Bahinasta baka patu palashar. Just sing it together. Bara mala pari baraha bidhambaha karichit sabala ali sagopar gaha samabhati yatra mukunda tahi bhagna katta yaksharito vai tat padhambuja rajonilanita Vihayati vayam iva bahu punya prima vipita bhujak stintipata. Translation. My dear Gopi, sometimes Mukunda imitates the appearance of a wrestler by decorating himself with leaves, peacock feathers, and colored minerals. Then in the company of Balaram and the cowherd boys, he plays his flute to call the cows. At that time, the rivers stop flowing, their waters stunned by the ecstasy they feel as they eagerly wait for the wind to bring them the dust of his lotus feet. But like us, the rivers are not very pious, and thus they merely wait with their arms trembling out of love. Purport. The gopis state here that the sound of Krishna's flute causes even inanimate objects like rivers to become conscious and then stunned in ecstasy. Just as the gopis could not always be in Krishna's physical association, the rivers could not come to the Lord's lotus feet. Although they desire the Lord, their movement was checked by ecstasy, and their arms, their waves, trembled with love of Godhead. Text 8 through 11, we can say together. Anuchara, you ready? Anucharai samanuvarnita virya adi purusha iva chalabhuti vanacharo giri tateshu charanti venu navayati gasaya dahi vanalatastarava atmani vishnu Vyanjayantaya eva pushpa paladhaya pranata bara vitapa madhudhara prema hrishta tannavo vavishushma darshaniya tilako vanamala divya ghanta tulasi madhumatai Ali kula ala gugita ma bishtam adriyam yarhi sandita venu sarasti sarasa hamsa vihangash charugita hrita chetasa etya harim upasata teyata chitta hanta milita drisho dritta mana Translation. Krishna moves about the forest in the company of his friends, who vividly chant the glories of his magnificent deeds. He thus appears just like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, exhibiting his inexhaustible opulences. When the cows wander onto the mountainsides and Krishna calls out to them with the sound of his flute, the trees and creepers in the forest respond by becoming so luxuriant with fruits and flowers that they seem to be manifesting Lord Vishnu within their hearts. As their branches bend low with the weight, the filaments on the trunks and vines stand erect out of the ecstasy of love of God, and both the trees and the creepers pour down a rain of sweet sap. Maddened by the divine honey-like aroma of the tulsi flowers on the garland Krishna wears, swarms of bees sing loudly for him, And that most beautiful of all persons thankfully acknowledges and acclaims their song by taking his flute to his lips and playing it. The charming flute song then steals away the minds of the cranes, swans, and other lake-dwelling birds. Indeed, they approach Krishna, close their eyes, and maintaining strict silence, worship him by fixing their consciousness upon him in deep meditation. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has made several illuminating comments on these verses. He gives the analogy that just as when householder Vaishnavas hear a Sankirtan party approaching, they become ecstatic and offer obeisances, so the trees and creepers in Vrindavan became ecstatic when they heard Krishna's flute and bowed low with their branches and vines. The word darshaniya tilaka in text 10 indicates not only that the Lord is the most excellent to see, but also that he decorated himself with attractive reddish tilak taken from the mineral rich earth of Vrindavan forest. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti also points out that Tulasi, although exalted in many ways, is not normally considered an especially fragrant plant. However, early in the morning, Tulsi emits a transcendental fragrance that ordinary people cannot perceive, but that transcendental personalities fully appreciate. The bees, who are privileged to swarm about the flower garlands worn by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, certainly appreciate this fragrance, and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti quotes from the Bhagavatam 3:15:19, to the fact that the most fragrant plants in Vaikuntha also appreciate the special qualifications of Tulsi Devi. The word Sandhita Venam in text 10 indicates that Lord Krishna places flute firmly upon his lips, and the melody emanating from that flute is certainly the most enchanting of sounds, as the gopis describe in this chapter. So we could probably read this verse a few times and relish it more each time. It's really nectar songs that are being sung by the topmost gopis. And here these are descriptions that actually reveal a lot of the gopis' very intimate appreciation for Krishna and their love for Krishna. And so we hit very vivid description of what Krishna looks like when he's going in the forest, who he's with, what he does, and how he reciprocates with all the different living entities in that forest. And they're describing irresistible Krishna. Here, who can not resist hearing these different explanations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And pretty talented, the gopis. Here they are, they're busy probably, you know, churning milk and doing all their household duties, but at the same time they're spontaneously creating all these beautiful songs just out of their heart. Nothing that they had to sit down and go on the computer, figure out and rhyme and everything like that, but just it springs from their heart because this is their meditation all day long. But these are actually meditations that are spoken in separation. Separation is actually quite painful. If anyone's ever been separated from someone for a long time, it's very painful to the heart. But somehow or other, this pain is actually pleasurable pain. It's actually something that they're experiencing as the greatest pleasure. Something like when something gets so cold, it gets hot. You know, sometimes it just like burns because it's so cold. In the same way, this is so painful that it's pleasurable. Whereas in the material world, the so-called pleasure in the material world is actually painful because it costs a lot of money, and then it's gone, and then you're left with nothing but humdrum of material life. So it's actually the most painful thing. This flickering on and off. But here, the separation is actually their pleasure. So this is what we call transcendental. Everything is opposite in the spiritual realm, and only those transcendentalists can actually experience that. I know for me it's very hard to understand how they could be separated, but be, and sometimes they're even with Krishna and they're experiencing separation and pain, although he's sitting right next to him. But this is something that we can look forward to trying to understand as we get purified. Actually, what happens is that the more we do service and the more we actually engage in bhakti, what it does is that it will slowly, you know, make the layers that are contaminating our heart thinner and thinner. It like thins our blood, and such that our hearts will become very, very sensitive, so that we can actually begin to understand these matters much more, that we can actually begin to also experience some of that pleasure. And the course of pure devotee, his heart is so sensitive that all he wants to hear is something like this. All he wants to hear is these pastimes over and over again. And if you were to go and explain some mundane thing, he would block his ears, run away. So we can imagine going to the gopis, you know, in the middle of these prayers and these songs and saying, excuse me, and start gabbing about something mundane. You can imagine, they would be like, what the, you know, and they would probably run away. So this is what should happen to our hearts, is that we become so attracted that all we really want to do is hear about Krishna. We can pray for that day to come sooner than later, because even now, we find that our hearts are getting a little bit more sensitive, and we don't want to hear so much garbage, you know. It's really uncomfortable. We feel very uncomfortable when someone starts talking about something that has nothing to do with anything about Krishna consciousness. We just, like, you know, want to go away. And it's our choice. We have to defend our soul now that we have this knowledge. It is our responsibility. It's our duty to defend that poor little soul that's been covered up and contaminated, and we have to choose. That's our position now, is to choose. Do we want to hear something transcendental, or do we want to hear something mundane? And that's very important in our spiritual life to make that decision. And but the more we do hear these descriptions, the more we'll become attracted. But we have to hear them. I know that on a long plane trip, you know, 6-8 hours, you're in a plane and they have the video things right next to you, and you can usually see between the two seats. You can see the one up in front of you, you can see the one next to you. Or if you stand up to stretch your legs, you see 100 of them with something else going on, all of them, and you're like, you know, and all of a sudden your eye catches it, you know, and the person next to you, and then you're like, oh, no, I don't want to see it, no, but, you know, what's going to happen next, you know? And I got caught by one on the plane coming back from India. It was so painful. It was like, oh, it was like tearing my heart out, because I didn't really want to watch it, you know? Finally, I just had to, like, do something. But I suffered for 2 weeks after that. The vision was in my mind. I had horrified dreams of it, and I kept thinking, I wonder what ever happened, you know? And it was like, what a drag for my Krishna consciousness, you know? And luckily, it's kind of slowed down a little bit, but still, you can reflect back, you know? It's so important that we make this decision in this lifetime not to subject ourselves to this. It's our choice, and it's so important, because it does have a gnawing effect on our Krishna consciousness. So the gopis here, they're describing some wonderful things about Krishna, three irresistible qualities of Krishna that stand out in these wonderful verses. And one is, of course, Krishna's beauty, what he looks like, and also his flute playing. This really dominates this section of the Bhagavatam. And then also Krishna's playfulness. How he relates to so many different living entities. And so Krishna, the gopis are discussing all these different things, and to our satisfaction we get to hear them. But they're actually in a mood of separation, and you're thinking, how long were they really separated from Krishna in a day? You know, they were there making Krishna's breakfast, many of them helped with Krishna's breakfast. That's very early in the morning. And then they would be there when Krishna ate breakfast and try to get some of the remnants, you know. They'd be hoping there would be something left. And then they would follow them almost to the forest edge, and then they would go away. So that's when they were actually separated, not for very long. And even if you read Krishna's pastimes, that in the middle of the day after lunch, Krishna would kind of disappear and sneak off. Where was he all this time? Just, you know, following some cows? No. He would actually tell the cowboys, I'll see you in a little bit, and he would be with the gopis. They would have excuses to go pick flowers, and then they would be with the gopis. He'd be with them during the afternoon for quite a few hours, and then he would come home, and they'd be waiting there, standing, waiting for him to come and watch him come with the dust of the cows. And then they would be there hanging around the house while he's getting ready for evening. And then, of course, at night, they would be sneaking out and they'd be with him again. So really, they weren't separated very long. And during that time, here they are with Krishna, explaining his glories. But we're the pitiful ones. We've been separated for a long time, out of our choice, of course, but for thousands and thousands of lifetimes, we've been separated. So our situation is very, very pitiful. And so we should realize how much we have to hear these pastimes and absorb ourselves in this consciousness, and to try to remember how wonderful Krishna looks going into the forest and playing his flute. And this flute playing is very special, and you'll see here a couple times in the past, in this passages, that Krishna's playing his flute for who? The cows, right? They go off and he calls them, he likes their mooing, he plays it for him, and he does it for their satisfaction, for their comfort. Srila Prabhupada discusses that this name of Gopal, Govinda, Go is there. This is the name for the cows that Krishna is so fond of. And it's described that Krishna's real business is Go Brahmanya Hataya Cha, Jagati Chaya Krishnaya, Govindaya Namo Maha. So this is Krishna's real business, is taking care of the cows and the Brahmins. And actually giving comfort to the Brahmanas is actually secondary. Srila Prabhupada says that actually the first business, the most important, is to take care of the cows. So we should, we have an opportunity now that we're increasing our cow program, that we should realize that this business is very, very important, that we take care of Krishna Balaram's cows. And hopefully the herd will increase, and that our service will increase proportionately, indirectly or directly. Like we had a crew out here last weekend, putting in the fencing and things like that. I know a lot of devotees have been visiting our new calf, and we have this barn raising here, which is so important, because the preaching of this, Prabhupada said, should be our business also, to tell the outside world how important it is to protect the cows. And so this, Prabhupada said that this is actually the welfare work for the whole world. What we're doing here at this farm, what we can increase and publicize about the protection of cows, is the welfare for the whole entire world. So we should take it very seriously and try to get this barn done very quickly, so that we can bring people here and use as an outpost to show them that the cows are so important here. They're so important to Krishna. I just was received a YouTube thing in India of a Goshala that used every single thing that the cow gave. Someone was going behind it with a bucket to catch the urine in the morning. They had hundreds and hundreds, thousands of cows. And then they were sweeping up the dung for many, many, many purposes. And then they were giving arti daily to the cows. So many different important things that we should understand. And we will receive mercy of Srila Prabhupada and Krishna by taking care of Krishna Balaram's cows. So there's one very nice verse in this, Gopal Sahasranam, Thousand Names of Gopal, which echo this importance of taking care of the cows and the brahmanas. It's a fun one to read. Nando Nandi Mahanandi Madi Madanaka Kili Mili Hili Gili Goli Golo Golalayo Guli. He is full of transcendental bliss. Nanda Nandi Mahanandi Madi and Madanaka. He enjoys pastimes, Kili, meets his devotees, Mili, dances, Hili, eats, Gili, protects the cows, Goli and Gola, resides in Goloka, Golalaya, and protects his devotees, Guli. So this is echoes that actually Krishna is always thinking of the cows and the Brahmins. Nando Nandi Mahanandi Madi Mananaka Kili Mili Hili Gili Goli Golo Golaylo Guli. So we can try to meditate on that service and see what we can do to increase it. But here Krishna is in the forest, and many things are going on in this forest. It's actually becoming conscious, becoming alive, just as in the spiritual world. And we can see that the trees are now thinking, oh, I want to give something to Krishna. So they're all of a sudden exploding with fruits and flowers, and they're, because of the weight, they're bending down and the basis is to Krishna, please take this apple, this pear, or whatever, and please take these flowers. And then there's the rivers. They're also experiencing a little bit of deprivation because they can't go out and to Krishna, but they're begging that Krishna will come to them, so that separation. And they become stunned, and they actually start to flow backwards, which would be pretty exciting to see a river all of a sudden reverse and go the other way. Probably a little disturbance. And then there's the other animals that have ability to sing, like the bees and swans and everything like that, the cranes and birds. And they're offering their beautiful verses and songs and music to Krishna, and Krishna in return says yes, very nice, and he plays a melody to acknowledge their offering. And then there's so many different minerals that Krishna is able to use, and we can see here that the forest is actually Krishna's entertainment place. This is where he goes. This is eternally. This is where he's choosing to go to enjoy. He's not thinking that, oh, I'm just going to go to my room and get out my pad or my pod or my E or my I, this or that, and this is where I'm going to have my entertainment. You know, this. But I'm going to go to the forest, and I'm going to take all the minerals, and I'm going to decorate with tilak, and I'm going to put flower earrings on and flower anklets and so many different things like this. And they're pretending like there's wrestling matches, pretending like they're the different animals. And so this forest is the place of the Lord's enjoyment. And so we should try to have some appreciation for that choice, and also try to supply a very nice forest here. I see someone's clearing out this beautiful area back in here, so we can appreciate and let Krishna Balaram see how beautiful it actually is around this property. I'm sure he's appreciating that service. But I'm wondering, you know, the children being brought up with their iPads and their virtual games and all this kind of stuff, are they going to actually be attracted to Krishna? Are they going to think, well, gosh, Krishna doesn't want to just go on and do all these games and everything. He just wants to hang out with some cows and just play in the dirt, you know. Maybe they won't even be attracted to Krishna, you know. So we should try and endeavor to let our children have contact with nature. When I was raised as a child, after school, I hit the groves. I hit the outside, playing with all the animals and this and that. Someone just sent me some beautiful clipping photographs of a Russian woman who took pictures of her children in nature at their farm in Russia. Gorgeous pictures of just the kids in solitude with nature. In the snow, or with their little bunny rabbit, or with their little duckies that just were born, or with their big dog, and being friends with their dogs and going off together. And, you know, it's nature. Krishna says, you know, that he is also the fragrance of the earth and so many different things like this in nature. So we should be very important in raising our children that we don't get too far away from Krishna. You know, God made the, man made the city and God made the country. So we should see the advantages in appreciating Krishna in this way. I know that I have many realizations when I just go off and you know, alone with nature and just chant Hare Krishna. It's intensified, you know, because that's all there is, you know, is just Krishna. So we should really try to develop and encourage this movement to go in that direction. And I think we'll find a lot more peace and realization and attractiveness towards Krishna if we do that. It's very, very important. Plus, in nature, you become more creative also, because there's nothing else. You leave your other thing, your technology behind. You're left to become creative, which is very important. Here, you know, Krishna has a totally green wardrobe. He's got everything decorated with all the flowers and vines and things. Except for one time, I remember our kids went off in the woods, and we had the ashram at a state park, and they came back with poison ivy all in their hair, and they thought it was some nice vine. So got to be a little careful. They really suffered for that one. So here the we're allowed to enter these pastimes by the gopis' songs. So we should take advantage and hear these over and over again, memorize them, so that they come up in our consciousness when we're chanting Hare Krishna. And then we can make that choice to go to that place where Krishna's pastimes are, and get finished. Just cut off our business with Maya in this lifetime and just tune in to Krishna. And there are many, many great saints and sages that have done that, and one is, his disappearance day is today, and that's Ishwara Puri. So I thought I would discuss a little bit since nothing has been mentioned. Ishwara Puri, of course, is a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. And can someone name two other great, great personalities who are on the altar that are also disciples of Madhavendra Puri? Lord Nityananda. Who else? Sri Advaita Acharya also. So Ishwara Puri is a very important person in the line of disciplic succession. He was actually born in a Brahmin family and educated. He actually contributed some one book, Krishna Lilamrita. But he contributed a lot more than that. He contributed the beautiful example of how to become a proper disciple of his spiritual master, Madhavendra Puri. Madhavendra Puri actually became very invalid at the end of his life. Devotees do that, I hate to tell you, but guess what? We become invalid at the end of our life. And his disciple, Ishwara Puri, actually took the humble position of cleaning up after him, the stool and urine, and becoming a very, very close associate of Madhavendra Puri. So much so that he got so many blessings before Madhavendra Puri left the planet. Actually, he was blessed with, he said that actually, I bless you, may you have Krishna Prema. Such a nice blessing. And of course he did. He got Krishna Prema. But he also got something else very special, and he got actually to play the position of being Lord Chaitanya's spiritual master, his guru, which doesn't happen to any ordinary person. So we can take advantage of this example and become the humble servant of our spiritual master, doing whatever needs to be done to spread his mission, no matter what it might be or where it might be. When Ishwara Puri was traveling, he actually would go to Navadvipa quite often, and he would go to the house of Gopinath Acharya and spend some time there discussing Krishna Katha. And at that time, Lord Chaitanya was Nimai. He was very small, and Ishwara Puri was very attracted by this beautiful young personality who was crawling around here and there in Nadia. And he actually later on would go to the house of Advaitacharya. But sometimes he wanted, because he was becoming an exalted personality and doing a lot of preaching, he would kind of want to hide himself. So he would kind of go in disguise and go to Advaitacharya's house just to have some association there and to hear transcendental topics. But it's hard to hide the identity of a Vaishnava. And Mukunda would notice there's a brilliant Vaishnava personality. And so he would sometimes start singing different pastimes and plays about Radha and Krishna. And then, of course, Madhavendra Ishwarpuri would fall into ecstasy and sometimes faint, and then his identity would be revealed. Ah, this is Ishwarpuri, the great saint. And at this time also, he noted Gadadhar, who would be very attracted to hear his recitations from his book, Krishna Lilamrita. And so he would sit there for many, many hours listening to these pastimes. And at that time, Lord Chaitanya was becoming a scholar, a renowned pundit. And so he actually asked Ishwarpuri at this time, I mean, Ishwarpuri asked Lord Chaitanya, would you be so kind as to, you know, look at my writings and edit it, have some comment on them. And Lord Chaitanya just looked at him and said, oh, they're surely faultless, you know, because he respected this great saint, Ishwarpuri. But at the same time, he'd say, no, please do some, you know, look at them very carefully. And Lord Chaitanya would do some corrections. And the things that would be done, Ishwarpuri would say, this is my ordinary person. This must be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he's beginning to think that, yes, who is this person? And so then later on, and Lord Chaitanya, when he was about 16 or 17, took his disciples. His father had passed away, and he went to Gaya. And in Gaya, he went to the place where he did some oblations, and then came across the place where the footprints of Lord Krishna were, and was beginning to experience some real realizations about Lord Krishna's position and how he was beginning to experience ecstasies and remembering Krishna. And at that time, by Krishna's arrangement, orchestration, supreme controller, Ishwarpuri came by. And at that time, upon seeing each other at that point, they embraced, and each of them began to glorify each other, and especially Lord Chaitanya was glorifying Ishwarpuri and indicating that he really wanted to fall at his feet and become his disciple. And during this time in Gaya, Lord Chaitanya went to many different places and did offerings. And at one point he was cooking an offering. Can't imagine Lord Chaitanya cooking, but anyway, he was making this offering. And Ishwarpuri came and said, oh, you have some rice? Maybe I'll read the pastime. I think I have it here. It's kind of nice. Let's see, where does it start? This is just a little discussion after they discussed, after they embraced, after seeing the footprints of Lord Krishna, and they embraced, they had a nice Krishna Gita. And then Ishwar Chandrapuri spoke, listen to me, O Pandit. I know very well that you are an expansion of the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, how is it possible for one to possess such vast learning and transcendental nature as you? I dreamt last night of meeting the Supreme Lord, and by seeing you now, that dream has been fulfilled. To speak the truth, O Pandit, every moment I am feeling increasing ecstasy in your presence. Ever since I saw you in Navadvip, there has been nothing else on my mind save and except for you. Whatever I have spoken is certainly the truth. Without motivation, I say this. The bliss one experiences in Lord Krishna's presence, I am experiencing that fully in your presence. The Lord was very pleased to hear the sincere words from his beloved Ishwarpuri. He said, it is my good fortune to have met you. They were very happy in each other's company, talking confidential topics of Krishna consciousness. Can imagine how ecstatic that must have been. And then at this, Lord Chaitanya, The Lord immediately left his cooking in the kitchen, offered his respectful obeisances, and sat him down comfortably, smiling. Srila Ishwar Chandra Puri said, "O Pandit, I have certainly come at the right time." The Lord replied, "Good fortune has smiled upon me today by sending you here. I pray that you will please accept some rice prasad." Srila Puripad smiled and said, "Accept then, what will you have?" The Lord replied, "I will cook some rice for myself now." Srila Puripad asked, "What is the use of cooking again? Whatever you have already cooked, let us share that between ourselves." Smiling, the Lord replied, "Whatever is already prepared is all for you. In no time at all, I can prepare something afresh. Please do not feel hesitant. You eat first." Offering to Ishwar Puri whatever he had already cooked for himself, the Lord went back to the kitchen and began preparing foodstuffs once again. Feeling great happiness, the Lord exhibited such great mercy to Ishwar Chandra Puri. Sripad Puri's only thought was Krishna. With his own hands, the Lord served Sripad Puri, who relished the Lord's cooking in great delight. While this was going on, Rama Devi, Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, personally appeared and cooked for the Lord, unseen by anyone in the kitchen. Having seen that Sripad Puri was fully satisfied, the Lord sat down to eat. These transcendental activities of the Lord and his devotees are so wonderful that anyone who hears them with faith and sincerity is certainly immediately granted unalloyed devotional service at the feet of Lord Krishna. So later, Lord Chaitanya went to the place where Ishwar Puri was born and took some dirt from that place and kept it in his cloth and said it was worshipful. So Ishwar Puri was no ordinary person. And then he was initiated by Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya was given some instruction at that time. And Ishwar Puri said, "Dance and chant, go out on Sankirtan, and deliver all the fallen souls." So this was Ishwar Puri's instructions, and of course Lord Chaitanya instructed that to all of us. And so Srila Prabhupada has continued that tradition. So you can see that we're in a line, in a sampradaya, in a line of such influential personalities, so much so that now the whole world is being influenced by this holy name. This holy name is so very important, just like we were hearing that in the reading of by the gopis, their separation, and we're separated. Although we have the holy name, which is non different than Krishna, we need to really realize that this holy name is Krishna. And we have to really concentrate and focus on this chanting of Hare Krishna, not just getting our rounds done, not just displaying it on the street corners, but actually taking this holy name is the most important thing in our existence, is that somehow or other we give up, go where we can't have any distractions and just absorb ourselves in this holy name. And then those realizations will come, so much so that we're going to want to go out. We're going to want to follow in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya, and we're going to beg people, "Please, you try this chanting of Hare Krishna because it has done something to me." And if you take it seriously, if you just chant these holy names, this mantra every day, you will experience a whole change of consciousness, so much so that you're going to become attracted to Krishna. So this sampradaya of Gaudiya, of chanting the holy name, chanting Lord Chaitanya's name and Krishna's name, should become our life and soul, and we should take it so seriously that every day we should look forward to our japa and just figure out how much more I can concentrate and focus on these holy names, taking it into my heart, using my intelligence and my heart to completely become absorbed in it. And this should be our real mission in life, and as described by our previous acharyas, Ishwar Puri being a very important one. So we can remember him, pray to him today. The strength is by this guru, our strength is from this guru parampara. We don't have any strength on our own. So we really need to pray today. And if anyone would like to come join us at Santa Fe Community College, we'll be chanting Rain or Shine at at one of the places back on the hallways to benedict others with this holy name. So maybe someone else has something more to share about Ishwarpur that I didn't happen to find. Kunuri Vijaniti, do you have anything else you could add to that? I wish we knew more about his life.
One mistake that Lord Chaitanya pointed out when in Ishwarpuri's book, Ishwarpuri considered it overnight and he came back the next day and he said, no, I've considered it. And he said, no, that's not a mistake. It's actually supposed to be like that. And he explained why, and Lord Chaitanya accepted his defeat at that point, that even though Lord Chaitanya was such a great scholar, he was defeated by his devotee. He accepted defeat at the hand of his devotee. When Lord Chaitanya, when Ishwarpuri asked Lord Chaitanya to edit his book, Lord Chaitanya explained that there's one nice verse that Bhava Grahi Janardana, that the Lord accepts the mood of the devotee. He said, the verse is that the fools, they say, Vishnaya, Murko Vedati Vishnaya, Dearest Vedati Vishnave, Ubayastu Samam Punyam Bhava Grahi Janardana, that someone who is not acquainted with grammar, he says, like when they were offering oblations, you say Vishnaya, but actually the proper form is Vishnave when you're offering. But Krishna accepts both. He accepts both because takes the mood of the devotee. So someone may not be very proper with their pronunciation or something like that. We say, there's so many examples like that. Ramo, Ramo. And anyway. But Krishna accepts the mood of the devotee. He's Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam Yomi Bhakti Prayachati. The bhakti is the important thing in our offerings, devotional service. Thank you for your nice class. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else have anything? Oh, yes. My trade guru. Our transcendental gardener.
Hare Krishna. Do you feel optimistic, please, that we'll be able to get the children to go back to nature again and get them away from all these artificial things that they have, that they'll be able to learn the resourcefulness, you know, from nature, seeing the Achintya Shakti again, instead of just breaking everything and screaming and...
I tell you, my heart really feels sorry. You know, I really feel sorry, and I would like my heart to feel better before I left the planet, that our kids could be directed more in that direction, because I don't see it happening. But I think we should do our best here. We can only do what we can do, but maybe on this property, it's such 127 acres and such a wonderful facility, whereas people that don't have live in apartments, things like that. If we can make a place where we can have camps, weekend and summer camps and things like that, then maybe they will see what they're missing out on. So we can only do what we can do, but I think we should do what we can full speed ahead, because otherwise it's a shame to see them not even know that, you know, how things grow or anything, you know. And I had girls in the ashram think that spaghetti grew on trees. This was a long time ago, but still. I mean, I go to grocery stores and buy some, you know, vegetables, and people have to look it up. They don't even know what an eggplant is or a cauliflower, you know. So, you know, we have a lot of work to do, even with our own kids, I think. You know, how many of them know how to really brush a cow and take care of cows and things like that? So, yeah, build tree forts and have Krishna-conscious games out in the woods. And I mean, I was in Europe one time in Slovenia, in the mountains, at a retreat. I was giving some classes, and some kids came over and said, oh, come over here. And they had just taken four little rocks, and they had baked a bread in those four rocks. They made a little teeny fire out of leaves and stuff like that. They just mixed some flour and water, and they just put it in there for a few hours, and they said, here, have a piece of bread. It was fantastic bread. How many of our kids could go make a loaf of bread and just stick them out in the woods, you know? So, yeah. Let's hope so. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.